It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to see my partner, my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
About Sean, how you doing this morning?
Doing good. It's turkey season and the fish are biting and all the good things in the world have come together. It's good time.
It is. The river's high as it can be, though. That's a problem we have around here.
Yeah, but I'll say this. On the inshore side, Captain Bobby Abrascato said, you know, obviously it's messed up bay fishing, but Mississippi Sound, you get just out front of, you know, the dead end rivers, that kind of, those fish are still doing it. So
good.
So that, yeah, I mean, are you a little messed up right there in the bay? Sure. Another side thing, sheephead reports this year have been, let me use a technical term, and we have a biologist coming on with us in a second, have been stupid.
Yeah.
They've been stupid. That, like,
I don't think that's a biologist word.
Yeah, okay, we'll find out for the biologist here in a second. The reports have been stupid. Captain Bobby said the same. It's just been a really big year on that.
As long as you own a chainsaw, you're in good shape.
Tell you what, they're fantastic to eat. Like, on my boat, everybody's welcome to keep one.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to clean them. But they're fantastic to eat. And a lot of fun to catch.
Yeah.
They, especially this time of year, they fight like a dog. But with all the fresh water in the bay, Captain Bobby's saying that the first set of rigs out, like where we go catch bait and all those, he said they're just loaded with sheephead and the water's clearer there because, you know, the mud's going out and going west. And you can go to the east and get some clearer water. And he said it's been real good. Plus, out there, you catch redfish and red snapper and all those things that you're not going to keep.
Awesome.
But, yeah, he said the sheephead fishing's been good. So, yeah, actually, as we discuss, you know, a little bit of fishing, we're going to talk about some turkey hunting as well. And I'll bring the biologist on and director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, our friend Chuck Sykes, joins us now. So the term is stupid, Chuck. It's stupid good.
Everybody knows that's a good thing. Of course, it's a biological term.
Thank you for the reinforcement. This fishing's been stupid. Oh my gosh, so much to talk about here as we are in this favorite time of year for so many of us in turkey season. And just personally, I know you've been with some folks and calling for folks and guiding folks and having a pretty darn good time. See a lot of smiling faces and pictures. So you've gotten to see some get shot this season.
It's been good. I've been on several pretty good hunts. We had our governor's hunt last week that you participated in, and we had good success there for an Alabama hunt. I think we were about 30%, which I think is good. It's just day to day. Y'all know your turkey hunters, one day they're ripping it and gobbling stupid, and then one day you would think there's not a turkey in four counties.
Well, that is a biological word.
He just used it. Biologists use it.
Yeah.
But I do wonder about that. And, you know, that we do so much research. And, I mean, I've always kind of had this, I guess, hayseed idea of it's low pressure, it's clouds. These things keep turkeys from gobbling. But there's a thing that we don't know, right? That, you know, they gobbled on Tuesday like crazy and it seemed the same on Wednesday and they didn't gobble.
Well, they may have been tired. They may have gobbled too much on Tuesday.
You know, it's just, and
they
you think
exceeded their quota for the week.
I had some that must have done that by beginning of season because they gobbled so much so far, and maybe we'll hear it again. Let's talk about that too. The date moving forward, the time shift for turkey season. We've talked about it much before season, but we're in it now. Going into May and May hunting, I've told you I've had the two different hunts, two different May hunts that were great for me. Looking back at last year and the year before, what are you hearing? I mean, people still killing birds in May?
There's no reason why it's not going to happen this year. It's weather dependent and pressure dependent. If the turkeys hadn't been pressured too much and we have some good weather, absolutely you're going to kill them on into May.
And I'll tell you what's going to happen too. Fishing season opens up the 1st of May, usually I think it's amberjack season opens up. And if you got pretty weather, people are going to quit turkey hunting. And they're going to go offshore or, you know, bass fishing is going to be good or whatever. I don't think there'll be as many people hunting May. Well, and it gets thick. It gets hot normally. You get 80, 90-degree weather.
The first year we had a May hunt, I texted Chuck about this. It was like 48 degrees here in Mobile County, and I killed a turkey.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I'm not saying
it was like
it's not
May 1 or 2 or something like that.
I'm not saying that it can't be good. And I've heard them, you know, all the way in the middle of May gobbling good, you know. So, but I don't know. Most people, when it gets to the first middle of May or the first few days, the first week of May, I think most people are about done with it, especially with it getting so thick and it gets so hot normally.
Chuck, I mean, we kill the most of the gobblers that get killed in the state get killed in the beginning of season, don't they?
They do. I mean, the first 2 weeks of the season is probably half of our turkey harvest. And that was one of the complaints that we got this year, that we were going to open the season too late. They were going to be gobbled out, wasn't going to kill as many birds. And I just looked at the first 12 days from last year, so from October 20th to April 1, versus March the 25th through April 1 this year, which was 7 days. And last year, we averaged, let's just say, 550 birds a day registered into gang check. This year, it was like 776.
Dead gum.
My Lord.
Yes, it was like a 40% increase. So apparently they weren't gobbled out.
No, I don't think so.
And we didn't destroy hunting by moving it back a week, because seems like the kill is up a little bit.
A little bit,
40%. You know, Chuck, I won't tell you, I believe that. And most of my buddies that, you know, I run around with and talk to, you know, 10 times a week just about turkey hunting, they've all killed more turkeys now than they have normally by this time of the season. I don't know whether we got more turkeys or what's good. The weather's been good. I don't know what it is, but there has been my buddies have killed the turkeys now. I can tell you that.
I'm sure there is a plethora of reasons, none of which will be attributed to anything positive that we did.
Yeah.
You know,
that's normal.
But here, you know, one of the issues is, I think it's like looking at stuff in small slices. And I've learned this just like what reading and hanging around with folks like you that know biology is, you'll see like, so we've been talking about the downtrend in turkey populations. And in that downtrend, you may have an up spike. And in that year, everybody goes, well, dust my jeans off here, where work is done, everything's finished. And that's just a little spike in a bigger trend. I mean, is there any way to zoom out here and look at that, Chuck, and say, I mean, are we still in this issue of poult recruitment and being below 2 per hen? And, I mean, that's the big problem.
Well, yeah, as of last year, yes. It was like a 10-year trend of downward. So, sure, all the stars may line up. The weather may be great. We may have a bumper crop 1 year. But that does not say that the problem's fixed. One anomaly year in a 10-year trend does not fix something.
True.
And go back a little bit in things we've talked about on past shows, but I'm going to say what I think I know, and then you can correct me. It's 2 poults per hen is like neutral, hanging steady, right? That's like a neutral there, not growing but not losing population. Is that close?
Yeah, if you drop below 2 per hen, then you're getting in trouble.
So you're not replacing.
Is, you know, that's scraping the bottom of the barrel, trying to hold things consistent. And then you've got to look at the number of hens without poults. So,
right,
you know, you may have one hen with 5, but then you've got 4 that have none. So you've got to look at all of that together.
And that's one of the things that people I know this is kind of going over things that we have done last year and talked about in the past, but maybe new to some people, was this, you know, the shifting of dates too, to try to make sure that all hens were getting bred. Because it was kind of baloney. It was a huge eye opener for me when you talked about it and Dr. Chamberlain talked about it with us and all, that there were hens that didn't get bred. I was slack jawed. I thought, they all get bred. But that was a worry.
According to science, that is one of the biggest issues that we have to face right now, is a disruption in the normal mating process, where we've got hens that are not getting bred, or either hens that are staggering their nesting where predators can do more damage to it. You know, we've talked about this, and we beat this dead horse. If all of your does are dropping fawns at the same time, predators can only take, let's just say, 30%. But if your does drop them over 3 months, and that same amount of predators can take 30% 1 month, 30% the next month, and 30% the next month, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
So if we have all of our hens bred, nesting pretty close to the same time, coming off at the same time, predator numbers held constant, we're going to have more poults make it than if it takes those hens 2 or 3 months to get a clutch off.
Yeah, that's that.
That's just common sense. That's right.
Like, if we weren't there, like if humans weren't interacting, you know, that you would have this, what do they call it, predator swamping or whatever the different critters do. They have all their young at one time, so you can't get them all.
That's right.
So if we weren't involved, in other words, if we weren't hunting, we weren't manipulating, they would most likely all go to nest generally in the same period of time, which I guess our peak nesting is this coming week, right? Mid-April or so in Alabama?
Mid-April. Yep, mid-April is peak nest initiation.
So, you know, that, and it makes a point. I mean, if you think about that, if they can take 30%, but if they all nested at one time, they would only get 30% of those. But if they can get 30% over all that time, what does that add up to? And that's – so how, what do we – make sure all the hens are bred, but is there any – hierarchy or pecking order? Because, you know, we know hens do it just like gobblers, that who gets to nest first, or if they're all bred, doesn't matter where your rank is, you go to nest? Is there any research on that?
Well, all I have is redneck theory.
I like that.
Yeah. Dr. Chamberlain, that's a lot of the work that he's working on, and he is saying 100% there is a hierarchy among hens just like it is among gobblers.
And so they get they decide when they're going to, we go back to the gobblers breeding them, but, you know, making sure they got the dominant gobbler. And then I guess the dominant hen gets to breed first, I would guess.
That's what he's saying, yes.
It's something,
and not based on anecdotal evidence. It's scientific research. So.
Other challenges in the turkey world, too, as we talk about outside of just the season dates and those kind of things, on the management side, I hear a lot of people talking about that we may not have enough brooding cover. Like, you may have nests, but you don't have places for the little ones to go. Is that an issue? And, I mean, is that something we're addressing on our public lands here in the state?
Sure it is. I mean, they need food, cover, and water, just like everything, including us. Well, turkeys take it a step further. They need roosting cover. They need nesting cover. They need brood rearing cover for different stages of growth of those poults. So if you don't have that, then you're not going to have much success.
Right, but if you don't have it, like, explain, you say, okay, nesting cover and brood cover. How are they different?
Well, nesting cover needs to be some place that a hen can avoid predation, that she's got cover where she can escape avian predators. She's got hiding places where she can escape raccoons and possums and foxes and coyotes. And then once she brings those broods off, once she hatches that clutch of eggs, those little chicks need clean ground to walk on, but some structure above them to protect them from avian predators. And then the bigger they get and they can escape a little bit better, then that cover density and what they're looking for changes a little bit. So, you know, their first few weeks, they need a bunch of insects. So a good burn with nice young growth and a lot of insects, those are places that those hens can take those poults. Good roadside where they can pick around on the edge of the road, but then have some escape cover right there close by. So it all plays a huge key into success, is being able to fulfill all those habitat types.
Very good. We're coming right back. More with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sines, talking some more turkeys in the mix. Plus, got the director on. We got to talk about the CWD story in our state. We'll do that when we come back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, breaking off part of his weekend to talk with us, and we appreciate that. And, of course, we're talking turkeys at this point. We will talk, unfortunately, we'll be talking CWD here in a second, but let's stick with the turkey conversation here and the ability to, on public land, so, you know, and whether that be traditional WMA or SOAs, you know, the things that we talk about here for maximizing production, I'm sure y'all are looking at those things on the public lands, right? I mean, I know there's certain public properties that got a lot of burns. I mean, Conecuh National Forest and all that got a good bit of burning, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The properties that we own, we manage them to the best of our ability, not just for deer, but for turkeys, for quail, for songbirds, for a whole host of things. So good timber management and good wildlife management is good for everything, whether it's non-game or whether it's an animal that we hunt. So absolutely, we're managing.
Okay, is there truth in that? Because with your management hat on here, you know, I will say this, am I being honest when I say, well, if you're managing for turkeys like I'm doing, then it's good for deer. If you're managing for quail, it's good for deer and turkeys. Is that true, or am I just blowing smoke?
No management is the worst thing that you can do. So, yes, anything that you do, if you're thinning your timber to get sunlight on the ground, yes, in theory, it's helping deer, turkeys, and quail. If you're burning, in theory, it's helping deer, turkeys, and quail if you're doing it at the right time and the right intensity. If you're planting food plots with clover, is that helping your deer, turkeys, and quail? Absolutely. So, yes, you can say if I am managing for deer, I'm also helping everything else. It might not be the best strategy for everything else, but management is good for everybody.
Very good. You also mentioned this is a great conversation piece. I know just personally talking to you about it, you mentioned roadways. And their value for those turkey poults and turkeys in general, that's a way to add. It depends on how many roads you have, but you add a lot of open ground. If somebody can't have all the open ground they want, but if they have wide roadways, I mean that's shown in studies, right, to produce a lot of value for wildlife.
Sure, it is. A lot of the first thinnings that we're doing now, we're taking a little extra liberty along those roadsides where we've got good wide shoulders, where even if we don't do anything but alternate spring and summer disking just to stimulate different plant communities for coming in, that's a great place. Turkeys and quail need gravel and grit that they're getting up and down that road. If there's a wide road shoulder that's got bugs and grass and forbs in it where they can feed, and then it's adjacent to a little heavier cover where they can escape, I mean, that's perfect.
And they like dusting in it, too, if it ever dries up.
That's right. They can mud it in and make an adobe.
But reminder of folks, you know, we're here at kind of the on a midpoint. We're not actually to the – you know, we're close to the midpoint, but not the midpoint yet. A turkey season, so a lot more of it ahead of us. I know it sounds strange for me to talk deer this time of year, but I take this obviously very seriously. I know y'all do with the state as well. Chronic wasting disease. Can you give us an update where we are with that cases in the state? Kind of where and what can be done going forward?
Yeah, right now we have had two confirmed positives in the state, both in Lauderdale County, not far apart, and we've had probably right out of 1,000 samples up there, so I'll take 2 out of 1,000 mm-hmm. all day. We have some new regulations for up in that area that everybody can go to our website and see. The biggest thing that's going to concern people is this suspending of baiting and feeding wildlife in those two counties up there in our management zone. We're not requiring mandatory testing of all deer this year. We're going to have some mandatory days that we have looked at, and when game check numbers say the harvest is high, so we can maximize time our staff in the field. And we're going to have drop-off locations, freezer locations all over where people can cut the heads off of their deer and put them in those freezers. And we strongly suggest that people do it. So we're not freaking out. This didn't catch us off guard. Nothing's been a knee-jerk reaction. But we're at a point right now where there's no sense in doing anything too drastic till we can see a little bit more about what's going on.
People that don't know where Lauderdale County is, exactly where is Lauderdale County?
Up in northwest Alabama.
Okay, up next to Mississippi.
Mississippi and Tennessee, yes.
Okay, and that's where Mississippi, is that the area close to where Mississippi had the problem?
Absolutely. It's where we had a good idea if we were going to find it, that's where we were going to find it. It's about 30 miles from a Mississippi positive and about 30 miles from a Tennessee positive. So, yep.
Okay, so that you're not real surprised that we're having some in Alabama then?
Absolutely,
I mean,
not.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, how it moves, I think this is one thing to discuss, because for the years before, you've been talking with us and cautioning and telling people about the law of bringing deer in, bringing skulls in, bones, those kind of things into the state to basically let CWD move at 70 miles an hour. That's what you're trying to stop.
Yep.
Now that we have it in a, and we still got to obviously keep that to be stopped, but in a regular, I don't know, is it natural setting? Is that the right word for it? In a natural pace, are there any studies out there that shows how long it takes to move through the wild? Is there anything like that? Like if it was in, if it was in this county and it's got, how long does it take to go 30 miles? Or is that all different? Is it site specific?
Well, it's going to be different, but I think in Tennessee, they found it in December of 2018. We found it in, let's say, January of 2022.
We're having a little trouble hearing you, too, here. I don't know what happened with the phone. I can hear you, but it's some background there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, got you now. So,
So Tennessee and Mississippi both became positive in 2018.
Okay.
We just found it in 2022, and we've been looking in those areas. So you can do the math yourself. It travels really slowly on its own.
Okay. So this idea that, Lauderdale County, truly the other end of the state from us, we're sitting in Mobile County right now, and not that it would have to come there, it could come somewhere else, but it's not like it flashes across the state. If it's a natural progression, it is it's a slower process.
Absolutely. I'm going to hunt in Choctaw County this year just like I always do. If I harvest a deer, I may cook it that night. But if I go up and hunt in Lauderdale County, I'm going to have it tested before I consume it.
Very good.
Yeah. And it's very likely, I guess, that people hunting in Mississippi, and even though they're not supposed to bring bones or heads or whatever back over in Alabama, is that one way that it could have got started in Alabama, that somebody killed one in Mississippi in the county next to Alabama and brought it over to Alabama and kind of got it started that way? Is that possible?
Well, I'd say that's possible. I don't think just natural progression of rivers and creeks and drainages on how deer typically move, we're pretty confident that it just naturally moved down from Tennessee.
Okay, so naturally. Okay.
All right. Talk about something else moving. It continues to move through our state naturally, or used to be in the back of a pickup truck when people go catch them. What's our situation? Are we making any dent in the hogs? I mean, there are a lot of people talking about the night hunting the hogs. I don't know if that's anything beyond sport, but are we making any dent with the trapping programs and all that? Is there a metric on that?
In my opinion, not yet.
Okay.
It's been a little too early. And you're right. Hunting, whether it's overfeed with a dog at night, that's a sport. It's recreation. Now, granted, you're removing some hogs from the landscape, so every hog you take is good, but it's not going to eliminate the problem. Trapping is the best way that we have now until we can get the toxicants registered and get to where we can use them. And we have been working with USDA for several years on that, and we're progressing, but it's just slow.
You brought it up because I was good. Yep. I didn't know I've read like an article and heard a little discussion of these toxicants. Give me a something that I can understand. Explain how this would work, these toxicants.
Sodium nitrite is one that I'm fairly confident about that we will get probably within the next 5 years where we can use it. It's very effective. We've been working with USDA APHIS in Alabama and Texas for the past several years doing trials. It's above 90% effective on the efficacy of taking out the pigs. It's very humane. It's quick. It basically, they eat a bait that's laced with this toxicant. They walk off. They get sleepy. They lay down and go to sleep, and they don't wake up.
Okay.
And unlike many toxicants that, you know, if a coyote eats it, it dies. If the buzzard eats a coyote, it dies. If the eagle eats the buzzard, it dies. This does not.
Okay, so
it's terminal.
Okay, so it's a single action. But what about in a primary? So you put the, and is it like a feed, or I mean, what is it? Something it, you pour?
It's a feed. Yeah, it's a laced feed with that toxin.
Does it kill
and what
other
we're
critters?
Working on now is a delivery mechanism to reduce non-target consumption.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, how you prevent the other critters in the woods to go to that feed.
And that's what we're working on.
So if a deer happened to eat it, would it kill the deer?
Yes, sir. If you happened to eat it, it would kill you.
Oh, okay.
So you got to figure out, is it going to be like some kind of feeder design or something that only a hog gets into, or is it?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So okay, so it would be a situation I'm just trying to imagine what it'd be like. You'd set up this feeder location and put the toxicant in there. The hogs would come in there. The hogs are the only ones that could eat it. They would eat it and get poisoned to die.
Yes.
Man, they can't get that quick enough.
No, sir, and we are working just as fast as we can through the registration process.
Man, that'd be awesome, Chuck. Man, that would solve a lot of everybody's problems. I mean, we have problems, but I mean,
imagine being a farmer.
That's what I was going to say. We're recreational guys, and we have problems. But it's the farmers that, man, they wreak havoc with the farmers. So that would be great for the farmers.
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah, awesome, Chuck. That's good news.
No, it's really interesting too. Yeah. So you said the horizon on this, a few years, 5 years. What?
I'd say five.
5 years. Well, until
then, people still need to be going with the whole sounder removal using the large corral trap with video capability on your phone where you can drop the gate when you want to.
Yeah. Have you had any experience with the pig brigs, the nets?
Personally, I have not, but I have heard good things.
I have too, Chuck. I've known a couple of people that's used them, and they love them. One thing that they like about them, from what they're telling me, is that they watch the cameras. They put a camera on it, but they don't have to worry about pushing a button. You know,
right? No, and I understand the problem with me.
Yeah,
I'm 3 hours away from where my trap is, mm-hmm. So I can't have three pigs go in there and me have to go down there and get them out. So I still like it where I can control when the gate falls.
Right. Yeah.
You're like, oh, I got, you know, it's Friday afternoon. Okay, let's drop the gate. I can be there for Saturday.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Well,
but for some people that are close by and can watch it and go when they need to, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you might get 10 in there tonight and then tomorrow, I mean, you could leave them in there for a day, couldn't you? I mean, I don't see any reason why you have to go get them that day. You could leave them in there another night and probably catch some more and then go get them. Would that be possible?
Well, it depends on the time of year. If it's January and it's 40 degrees, yes.
Not a problem.
If it's July and it's 100, no.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. Well, the pig brig to me seems...
It's interesting. It's a different.
It seems like one of the best ways. But either way, it doesn't matter. Any kind of a pen that you can trap them in and get the whole family, you're doing a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All this, just like you're talking about, going out and hunting over corn and you kill one pig out of 25, that's not doing anything. Get dogs and go chase them and kill five out of 50, that's not doing anything. Go at night hunting and
it's
you kill.
Fun. Yeah.
Oh, it is. And you kill four hogs out of 100 that you see, that's not doing much. But it's fun.
How
it's sport.
How do we do on the licenses for the off season, the night hunting for coyotes and hogs? Where, how did
Sean,
they go?
Just to be perfectly honest with you, I have not looked at that.
Okay.
This year.
But that's an option out there for people who want to do that night hunting stuff. That's for sure. Yep. All right. I know this information, a whole lot more on the website. Is that probably the best place to go to get more information about this?
OutdoorAlabama.com.
All right. Very good. As always, we appreciate your time, Chuck. Thanks for making a little bit of time for us on this weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chuck. Yes,
thank you.
All right.
Sir.
There he is, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, and we're coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along. And good to talk to Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. During the news break, Mike and I telling turkey stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, we at the end of last week's show, we ran out of time. We're going to tell you, we talked so much fishing, and we didn't get to a couple more turkey stories we have to tell here.
Yeah.
And the, do you do... 1, 2, shoot? Do you do 1, 2, 3, shoot? Do you do that? And when turkeys come in...
Is it, do you shoot it 2 or do you shoot it 3?
Is it 1, 2? Okay, you're going to try to double here. First thing you've got to accomplish here is to figure out who's shooting what bird. There's two of y'all there.
There you go.
We always said, shoot them like you sit.
Yeah.
And we actually say that when ducks are coming in, too. Shoot like... So if you're on the left side, you shoot the birds that are there on your left side.
That works sometimes.
They're on the right side. Turkeys, same thing. Two gobblers come in. We'll say, shoot them like you sit.
Yeah.
In other words, the one that's on the left, the guy on the left gets, one on the right, the guy on the right gets. And then beyond that, then there's the 1, 2, and this discussions I've had me in stitches before. Is it 1, 2, 3, boom? Is it 1, 2, boom? Or is it one guy shoots and the other guy shoots right after?
Okay, I'll tell you my experience.
Okay, so yeah, this is your story. So talk to us about this.
Okay, well, I went hunting with a real good friend of mine, Donnie Clark. He's a realtor over in Baldwin County. And a friend of mine that owns some property asked me to take Donnie hunting. So I did. And Donnie hunts over all the time, deer hunting, and he knows where the turkeys are, you know, in the fall. So
good thing.
He said, man, they always turkeys here. I said, every time I go there and deer hunt, I always turkey there. And I said, okay, let's go.
Right.
So we get down there, and it's thick on both sides. There's a new road that's like 30 foot wide.
Okay.
And it comes to an L shape, comes one way and goes another way. So we just sit in the corner, you know, right in the corner. So I can see down both roads.
Perfect.
Perfect. But it's thick behind us, and it's thick in front of us.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, when it gets daylight, you know, I don't know, are they going to come through that thicket to us or what? But anyway, so daylight comes and turkeys start gobbling.
Okay.
So down to the left, there's like two or three turkeys gobbling down there, and down to the right, there's like two or three turkeys gobbling down there, but it's not any real close to us. I mean, I'm talking about 300-400 yards
right.
or maybe a little further, they're gobbling. So anyway, we sitting there, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I probably ought to get up and move.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, nah. I said, if they get on this road, they're going to come down this road.
Right.
And so I sit there, and I second-guess myself. You know, I'm trying to think, well, I need to get Donnie a turkey, you know. I need to make something happen. And it's you know, an hour and a half into daylight already, you know, and they're still gobbling. And finally I said, no. I said, Donnie, let's give it about 10 more minutes and we'll make a move. And then 10 minutes goes by and I said, no, Donnie, let's just stay right here. Patience kills turkeys.
Yeah.
Okay. So we sit there and about 20 minutes later, I look down the road and here comes some turkeys. At that time, I can't see what they are. They're, you know, 100 so yards.
Just tell the turkeys.
I see turkeys coming. So I tell Donnie, I said, Donnie, it gets a little closer. I said, I know one of them's a gobbler. I said, I don't know about the other two, but there's three turkeys coming. And it get a little closer, and I said, well, there's two gobblers and a hen coming. So I didn't yep anymore, right. Didn't do anything after I saw the turkeys. Never said another word. They're coming. No reason to start right. yepping or doing anything. So anyway, they coming, and they get up pretty close. And I just tell Donnie, you know, I said, now get your gun up and get ready. And they're in range at this point. Okay. So I get my gun up, and I get ready. And I just tell Donnie, I said, Donnie, whenever you get ready, shoot. Now, the one on the left is closer to us than the one on the right.
Uh-huh.
So I'm assuming.
You know what that does.
That he's going to shoot the one on the left. And this is, I wasn't going to do a 1, 2, 3, let's shoot. I've got my gun up, and I've got my gun on the one on the right. And just as soon as he pulls the trigger, I'm pulling my trigger. I mean,
right. Instantly,
yep. Right then. You know, so he pulls the trigger, and instantly I pull the trigger. And I look up, and I said, Donnie, you missed your turkey. He said, no, mine's dead. I said, Donnie, that's the one I shot. So anyway.
Y'all doubled up.
His gun jammed, you know. So I get up, and I shoot him, and I hit him. And then he flipped a little bit and got back up, and, you know, and I shot him again. I killed him, you know. But I'm thinking I'm on the right. He's on the left. And right. The turkey to the left is closer. Surely he's going to shoot it. But he said he thought the one on the right because he was strutting.
Uh-huh.
Because he was strutting, he thought that it was bigger, you know. But they were both about the same thing.
Right.
But anyway, you know, the story went good because we both got us a turkey, but it could have went bad.
Yes.
So it gets back to, you know, I wasn't thinking. Normally most people shoot one. If you're on the left, shoot them.
Yeah.
Left. But anyway, I know now that if we do that again, that I need to tell the person, you know, the turkey on the left, you take the one on the right. When yours gets close enough and you feel comfortable shoot, you shoot, and I'll be ready for the other one.
Right.
You know, and if mine gets behind a tree or whatever and I don't get to shoot, that's okay. It don't matter, you know. But the 1, 2, 3 has never worked for me. You know, I've tried that. It just – and I can't shoot one running and flying
right.
or whatever. I don't even try no more. If I don't get a good, clean shot, I won't shoot.
Don't shoot. Don't right. shoot.
So I just get my gun up too, and if the second one is available and, able to shoot, soon as he pulls his trigger, I mean, I'm ready. I mean, I've got a video of those turkeys,
yeah.
And you can hear it's bam, bam. I mean, it's just that quick that we both shoot. It's almost like one shot,
right?
But it's bam, bam. So anyway, that was, you know, just a really good story, and we both happy as we could be, you know. I think that was Donnie's second turkey that he's ever killed, and he was just
good for
ecstatic.
Him.
Oh, man, we had a blast. It was just an awesome trip. But you just got to have some communications with your partner when we turkey hunt, you know?
Yes.
You just do.
And, you know, one of the things, too, that if you get in that, and it doesn't always happen, but you and I both, and we can talk about ways to do it, been in that situation where there's more than one gobbler, maybe one's not even in range. So guy number one shoots.
Right.
And if you can purr, or I'll even hen cackle.
Yep.
And sometimes it stops them. Sometimes if they not when they take off like a 747 out of Brooklyn, but when they do the pitch up, you know how they pitch up to they'll like fly and then land to run. That kind of turkey sometimes, not always, but sometimes I've had luck with calling that turkey back in.
Absolutely, and I have too.
You purr, or I mean, like I said, or just hen cackle, because often I'll have a yelper in my mouth, and because you're hunting, and you can give it a second. Sometimes it can run right back in. Sometimes it can take 2 or 3 minutes, but that turkey that just flew out, they can't stand it. They're flopping from the turkey that was just killed, and you just cackled or purred, and they come back in. If everybody will just sit there.
That's the problem. A lot of people jump up instantly and start going after the turkey.
I was trained that way young to go step on their head. But yeah. I've been shooting TSS now for the last 4 years or so. Knocking on wood. Now, I had that horrible year last year. Thank God I came out of my slump and I'm killing turkeys now. But I missed a couple last year. Had a bad year. But when I hit them with TSS, I don't have to go stand on a head.
Yeah.
The turkey is dish
most of the time.
So, I mean, and if, you know, if that turkey's flopping, but the whole time it's flopping, its head is laying like a sock on the ground, and it's not getting its head up.
He's not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere.
He's just flopping.
And at that point, that flopping's often, even without you doing anything, you know, the turkey will come back to whip him. But in a lot of cases, even if he runs off for a second, just give it a second. It's worth trying. It doesn't always work. But you can get on there and purr and cackle and have that second turkey come walking back in, looking, and then run over that turkey that you just shot, and then you shoot that one.
Well, a lot of times, too. I mean, if you're hunting, if two people are hunting together and you shoot one of them and he starts flipping and flopping, that other one, before he even has time to go anywhere, he jumps on that other turkey and starts beating on it.
Right.
I mean, trying
to fight
it. And
that's the easiest when it happens that way. That's how we've gotten our doubles in the past. But I have had it happen where that turkey, when you shoot, pitches up. Once again, not like, you know how turkeys fly. I mean, there's the I'm flying to the next county. That usually doesn't work. But when they do that, where they pitch up to land and run, that turkey often will stop, especially if he's hearing that flopping and you can purr and cackle. And that turkey, it may take a minute or two, you know, for him to come back. Yeah, most of the time what happens is exactly what you say. They jump on that turkey. But I have had it where that turkey's gone away and he comes back.
Yeah. Or,
and I've said before I pull the trigger, big mistake. Bam.
Or if that turkey flips and flops enough and makes enough noise, I've had it call in other turkeys other than the one that was with it.
Yeah.
And well, the other day, I mean, the first turkey I killed, I think I told you, I think that was a story from last week, had like eight jakes come over.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't long beards or anything. And I was by myself. I wasn't going to shoot another turkey, but here comes eight jakes coming over to see what all that flopping is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other gobbler went on, but the eight jakes come over there to check it out. So you just don't never know. Don't get up unless the turkey's running off.
Yeah, if you're going to lose a turkey, don't lose a turkey.
Yeah,
yeah, you got to make that call.
If the turkey's flipping and flopping and he's dead out there, just sit there, you know, especially if you're with somebody and you're, you know, trying to pull a double or something. Just sit there. Don't get in a hurry.
Right.
Or if you just want to see more turkeys, you know.
Yep.
Not necessarily killing them. Just sit there. A lot of times that flipping and flopping, there'll be another one come.
Yeah.
Like I say, if you yip a little bit, purr, whatever.
Well, you know, you can see that too. Yeah, on the purr, like, the you know, taking a fly down wing, the same kind of like against a tree or when I take a wing to fly down. If somebody like Mike, who can do fight and purr, he has a method where he uses two. It's really awesome sounding. If you're doing that, if I can take that wing and pop it at the same time, might have that same effect. We'll come back and talk more about that when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. Reminder, too, catch the show throughout the weekend with the replays. We do it Saturday nights at 11, Sunday mornings as well, and you can catch the podcast. It'll post up here next hour or so after we finish the show and share that with folks out there, or go back and listen again. And also, you can find it through... We post the podcast to our Facebook page, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So check it out there. You can share it from there. Make sure you like the page, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So when you type in facebook.com/FM Talk, it'll want to take you to the main page, which is great. I want you to like that too. But then just put Outdoors on there as well and get the other page.
You'll find us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So a couple things as we close out for this week. We're towards the peak nesting week. This means lonely gobblers, gobbling in the middle of the day kind of stuff, I hope, coming up.
This is when you're really supposed to be able to kill a turkey easier.
Yes.
Is what all the old-timers say. Now, I can't tell you that I find that absolutely a fact, you know, but all the old-timers have always said forever, you start seeing the hens by themselves, you know, then what they're doing, they're leaving the gobblers, and, you know, they'll be four, five, six hens with a gobbler in the morning, and then, you know,
one drifts off,
one goes off, and then all of a sudden he looks around about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and he says, "I'm by myself here."
They get real killable when it's like that.
Yeah. So you sitting over there lightly yipping a little bit, he says, "Well, they're over there. That's where they're at." You know, I mean, and I, don't get me wrong, I've killed my share that way. Because I kill most of my turkeys in the mid-morning.
Yeah, because you're patient.
We've talked about that in the past. I mean, I 8 times or less that I've killed them in 30, 45 minutes of daylight.
Right.
And I hear people all the time around me, you know, shooting them right at daylight, you know, right after it cracks daylight. And I'm saying, my turkeys hadn't even hit the ground yet. You didn't kill one, you know? And I'm thinking, I don't kill them like that.
I've had those hunts. I've killed them right off the roost. Let me tell a story here before we wrap up about a friend of ours in common. You know, the guy that hunts with me most of the time.
I do.
Okay. He had a hunt on Thursday morning. He said birds had been real quiet, and they're real quiet on Thursday morning for me too. But he got out, and finally this bird gobbled, and he goes and gets as close as he dares. And because he wouldn't gobble in an owl, didn't gobble. And so he sits down, and he yelps, he gobbles. And he gobbles once more on the roost. He said the bird pitched to him. And he said the bird was backpedaling. The bird did like a little bit of a half circle loop, pitched out and came down through a road, off a creek and down through a road, and was, you know, waving his wings backwards, backpedaling like a duck as he saw him. But there was enough momentum that the turkey had to reach the ground before he could take off again. And he said the second the turkey's gobbler's foot hit the ground,
it was
bow! So that's a first light thing.
That's a good one.
All right, we'll do it again next week. Y'all have a great one. This is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.